Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. After years of ignoring one of the most shameful episodes in the state's history, the 2013 General Assembly finally decided to set aside $10 million for a fund to compensate victims of the state's eugenics program that operated into the 1970s. The deadline for victims of that program to apply for funds is rapidly approaching, and advocates are urging the General Assembly to extend the deadline to make sure everyone who was harmed by the horrific program has a chance to apply for the compensation that's available. Attorneys at the UNC Center for Civil Rights are working with the victims to help them navigate the process to apply for compensation. Elizabeth Haddix with the center joins us now to talk about the challenges applicants face. Well, Elizabeth, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the compensation for victims of the sterilization program. Can you briefly tell folks who are listening how the program works that's going to compensate people?
In order to be eligible for compensation, there's a statute that describes the eligibility, and there's rules, of course, that further describe the eligibility. But if you're a person who was a victim of the North Carolina eugenics program, then you file a claim, which is a two-page form that you can get off the Industrial Commission's website, or you can get it from us. Fill that out with your information and send it in before June 30th. It's supposed to be received by the Office of Justice for Sterilization Victims by June 30th. There is a deputy commissioner at the Industrial Commission, Deputy Commissioner Goodson, who is reviewing and adjudicating all of these claims. He renders a decision. Now, if you're filing on behalf of a victim, you're filing for somebody who cannot file for themselves because they've been adjudicated incompetent, or if you have their power of attorney, you fill out another section of the same form, the same claim form, and you have to file along with your form letters of guardianship from a court or a power of attorney. And that all, of course, has to be received by June 30th as well. If you're filing on behalf of a deceased victim, the statute says that the victim had to have been alive on June 30th of 2013. And you have to file with the form letters testamentary or letters of administration, which are court documents, you know, they're probate documents that you get from a court.
The estimates are there are 2,000 of these victims who are still alive, and I guess the last figures we saw roughly a month ago, the Office of Justice for Sterilization Victims had received only 442 claims.
Yeah, I think that's up to 520 or something now.
So are you concerned, just not only as an attorney with the UNC Center for Civil Rights, but as a person who cares about these folks, that, I mean, is this, how do these victims know that they're eligible? Is somebody trying to find them?
Well, we're trying to find them. The Center for Civil Rights is trying to find them. I don't know what the Office of Justice for Sterilization Victims is doing now to try to find living victims or their families. I know that there was no money in this budget, the budget for this program, to do any outreach. It's very concerning. We've asked members of the General Assembly, the Black Caucus leadership, about proposing an extension to the deadline. I'm not sure if that ever happened, but we wanted an extension to the deadline. We also wanted an extension of this living victim threshold of 2013. I mean, we've met a lot of people, clients who've contacted us, whose family member, the victim of the program, died before then, but after they had made contact with the Office of Justice for Sterilization Victims, because, you know, that office opened in 2010, and Charmaine Fuller Cooper did some outreach back then when she was the staff person for that office. And we've got documents showing that many of the people who contacted her office determined that they had been part of this program. Their names were, you know, they had a file with the eugenics board, then passed away before June 30, 2013. And it just seems rather unfair to us that those families would not be entitled to compensation.
And just to be clear, well, a couple things. I want to make sure people know that the Center for Civil Rights is doing this pro bono. It's not like there's money for the center out of this. It's to help, to help the people.
Yeah.
And secondly, so what happens to people who don't file in time? I mean, are they now ineligible forever to get compensation for this horror that was done to them?
That's right. That's how the statute of limitations works. It's an interesting legal question, though, isn't it? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think that there would be an argument to be made for some lawyer out there with some resources about the legal nature of this wrong that was done and whether there is a statute of limitations or not on a private right of action. But under this compensation program, I suspect that the wise counsel at the General Assembly worked it so it was like the Workers' Compensation Act, and that you would be waiving your right to have a private tort action against the state.
I guess what I find a little puzzling is that there's a finite, literally, if I mean, we know there's a number of people who are still living, there's a number of people who died, even, I mean, if we even say, let's say 2010, to be fairer about it. So why not leave this open until we find these people and give them their money?
Yeah, I don't see any good reason not to. Some spokesperson from the General Assembly, in response to an interview that I did a while back for the Center about the deadline, responded that extending the deadline would only delay payments to people, and they wanted to get people paid as quickly as possible. Well, the statute itself, and this goes back to your original question, you know, what's the process? The statute does not allow for payments to issue until July of 2015. We don't understand why it would delay people getting their payments beyond July 2015. You know, you got 6 months to issue decisions, and Deputy Commissioner Goodson is getting these decisions out pretty quickly. I mean, over 100 people have already received decisions. Not sure why that would delay the payments.
Finally, before I let you go, what are your thoughts about this whole process? You know, this has been something, ever since we learned of the details of just how horrible this was and how many people have been affected, which is now, you know, probably going on 10 years, and we finally have, maybe even more, we finally have compensation, and yet now it feels like in some ways that it's bogged down, which of course will mean less people will be alive to receive the meager compensation that they're entitled to.
You know, we've learned a whole lot by meeting these folks, these clients, getting to know them, their families. One thing that we discovered early on is that this requirement for deceased victims' families that they have these estate documents just reflects a real ignorance on the part of the lawmakers about who these folks are. They were targeted because of their lack of sophistication. They were targeted because they were poor. They were targeted by the eugenics ideologues. And they died without wills. They died without money. They didn't have estates. It costs money to set up an estate. You have to be literate to set up an estate. You have to have some facility with the clerk of court's office and doing paperwork and doing accountings, which are required when you have an estate. And so these requirements in the law that folks jump through all these hoops just, to us, underscores the real divide between the lawmakers and people of meager material means in North Carolina. That's been part of what's stung us about this. And then, of course, the other part, too, is just uncovering the hideousness of a eugenics program. By 1960, I think the Winston-Salem Journal reporters uncovered with more objective evidence that it was 60% of the victims were African-American. You know, over 90% were women, all of them poor, but most of them working. A lot of the folks that we've talked to, I mean, their family members were working the jobs that they could have during that time, which were, you know, under Jim Crow, pretty meager. But at any rate, that's not news to the Center for Civil Rights. We're intimately familiar with the nature of racism, but just getting to know all of these different people, you know, has been really profound for us.
I'm certainly glad that you guys are doing this. Thanks for all you're doing to help folks, and thanks for being with us. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for getting the word out, Chris.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.